Welcome to News Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and this will be one of my favorite programs because I've got three of my favorite people with me. First of all, Professor Kimball King from the Department of English, Kimball at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, well-known for many reasons, mainly for being the husband of Harriet King, who is now our wonderful historian for Chapel Hill, and we're enjoying her writing, Kimball. But we got you on because you're the expert at movies. And the Chapel Hill Historical Society's calendar for 2009 is centered around the movies, and you're our on-site expert for the movies that were shown in Chapel Hill all the time from the founding of the university more than 200 years ago. I think when – were you on the original faculty or you
– Not quite.
No. And also, Woody Durham's got an interest in movies, and I've been waiting for the chance that we could get Woody Durham on this program, and unfortunately for me, the University of North Carolina athletic programs, particularly the basketball programs, sort of keep Woody Durham busy all year round.
And I'll come back sometime and we'll talk football and basketball.
This is great, but you can also talk movies, can't you?
And well, I can. I think the you know, a number of us, Kimball and Bill and myself, probably hold the record for introducing the number of classic movie nights that we have done at the Alumni Center. Maybe it's made me out to be more of a movie fan, but I'm a fan of older movies. Now, I don't see so many of the new releases, but I'm a fan of the older movies, and we can get into that a little bit later as to why I am.
Look forward to talking about that. And President William Friday has also agreed to join us. And those of us who know Mr. Friday wonder whether he ever had time to go see a movie while he was working.
Well, D.G., it's not true that Woody and I built the Pickwick Theater. We've been around here a long time, but not that. But no, my very happy memory is walking by the theater there and talking with E. Carrington Smith. There's never been a more devoted Chapel Hillian than that fellow. He had a deep interest in sports. He had an interest in his community. He did so many special events and things like that that you were just drawn to him.
Well, how did he, we're of course talking about the new Chapel Hill Historical Society calendar for 2009, which is coming out sort of as we speak, and you can get it at the Chapel Hill Museum and places like that. But what did E. Carrington Smith have to do with the movies?
He brought the best movies that he could get to the theater. And everybody, he owned the place, and he saw to it that the young people here had first-run motion pictures. And Woody was making a reference a moment ago to his interest in sports, and that the award here still bears his name. But, no, he was the definition of true blue Carolina.
Well, what movie theater did he own and operate?
And the Carolina Theater.
And do you have a memory, Mr. Friday, of your, and you and I got here after the Second World War, and what was the movie scene in Chapel Hill like then? Or did you have time to, did you have time to go to the movies?
Very little time, D.G., to be honest, because we were all down there in law school together, Bill Aycock and Dick Phillips and Bill Dees and all that crowd, and we were just grinding away 7 days a week, and we all did it in 2 years.
Wow.
We all took the bar exam, and everybody passed.
That's a pretty good miracle. What about when you grew up over in Gaston County and the metropolis of Dallas? Did they have a movie theater, or did you all have to go to Gastonia to see the movies?
You went upstairs on the second floor of the county courthouse every Saturday night, and for 10 cents I got to see Buck Jones, Bob Steele, and Tom Mix. And I didn't miss a Saturday night, but I killed more Indians than anybody.
we won't tell on you. Well, Woody, you also grew up in a small town, well, a small city.
I did, in Albemarle.
In Albemarle,
right.
And not too far from where I grew up. But for us, Albemarle was a big town, so you might have had two movie theaters in Albemarle.
Well, we did have two movie theaters. As a matter of fact, we had two radio stations, and for a town of only 12,000, that was really unheard of back in those days. No, the Stanley Theater was the larger of the two, but then we had another theater about two or three blocks away called the Alameda, and I had always wondered about that name until one day I was looking through an atlas for something in California, and I saw Alameda, California. So I figured that's where the name came from. It had something to do with movies, but no, it was a great experience. And of course, I grew up in the days of the drive-in theaters. We went to a lot of the drive-in theaters then, which had first-run movies at that particular time. And, you know, you'd have to drive up and put the speaker in the car and listen to it in that manner. But those are some good memories.
The drive-in theater memories, there's some good memories we can't talk about. The family movie memories, and then the bunches of kids. There came a time when, at first, the drive-in movie sort of charged by the carload. Then they realized that wasn't working, that people were piling in the car, so they started charging by the occupants in the cars, and it became a kind of game whether you could hide somebody in in the trunk or something and slip
DG,
them in.
Well, DG, you started meddling now, and I do remember some of that when we would do that, about two or three of the cars, and it would really be funny. I remember somebody laughing out of the trunk one night. We'd put some people in my trunk, and we show up, and there are only two of us in the car at that time that the ticket taker can see, and I said, "Two, please," and they started laughing in the trunk because the ticket taker could very easily see there were only two in the car, at least only two that were visible and so forth. But that was a lot of fun back in those days. And I know that they knew that we were slipping some things by them, but they never made a big issue out of it.
It was that's a great memory. Kimball King, you grew up outside the small town, North Carolina, but you had to come to a small town in North Carolina with this interest in movies. And what did you think about the movie scene in Chapel Hill when you and Harriet got here?
Oh, I liked it very much, and I'd also been busy in graduate school before we came to Chapel Hill, and we probably came to the movies more frequently in Chapel Hill than we had in Madison, Wisconsin, where I was working on my PhD. So I was surprised that there was the wide variety of films in the area. And, of course, even today, you can go to Raleigh or Cary or other places of South Point if you want. But I find that the Varsity and the Chelsea in particular have most of the films that we want to see, that we like Timberline too.
The Varsity, DG, by the way, was the other theater across the street from the Carolina at the time that that I was here. It was a smaller theater, but they gave us an opportunity to have a choice of the movies that we wanted to see.
There was a free spirit of competition.
Yeah, that's right.
We're talking Professor Kimball King, Professor Woody Durham, and President William Friday and I are reminiscing about the movies in and around Chapel Hill and in the time of the 100 years of movies that are being celebrated by the Chapel Hill Historical Society in its new 2009 calendar. And we'll be talking some more about the calendar and the parts of the movies that are celebrated, the Chapel Hill movies that are celebrated there, after we take this short break. Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with President William Friday, with Woody Durham, and with Professor Kimball King on the occasion of the release of the new Chapel Hill Historical Society calendar for the year 2009, and it's called 100 Years of Movies. Kimball King, before we took the break, we were talking about your and Harriet's coming to Chapel Hill and examining the movie scene. But you're a scholar in a scholar, and you've got a little scholarly interest in the movies and how they reflect American life. I tried to get into one of your programs the other day at the Carolina Club that Woody was talking about, and they just laughed at me. They said, this thing's been full for weeks. He said, the waiting list is so long you haven't got a prayer. You're a popular lecturer on the movies.
You're nice to say that. Actually, I don't know that I know a whole lot about movies, but when I came to Carolina, O.B. Hardison had the idea that we should have a film criticism course, which would be offered jointly by the English department and the radio, television, motion picture department, which no longer exists but has been subsumed into other departments like communication arts. And there is, in fact, a real scholar now in the teaching film in film criticism in the English department.
Well, you need to tell us who it is so we can sort him or her out. Oh, yeah. Well, we will get him or her out.
Okay. So that would be good.
Well, now, but you're not stepping aside from an interest. You're not going to tell us. You're not going to talk about some of these movies.
I taught a course on the film noir last spring in the Friday Center. And I'm going to be offering a course on the Western film this fall in October, end of September. Well, no, October 7th, I think it begins. And that meets on Tuesday nights. And I think the programs over there are quite fascinating, and we've had good responses to them. People really love the movies, and I think what people like especially in Chapel Hill is the way in which they do reflect the history of the whole country. I mean, what you learn about American life in the film noir following the disillusionment that accompanied World War II, how the Western film gives us the whole history of why America is perhaps different from other countries.
Well, that's I'm stunned by that because I go to get entertained, I guess, more than anything else. And I wonder, Woody, you've taken a look at the calendar and you've even written a little piece about it, haven't you? You want to tell us about that?
I did. I was asked to do a piece, and I sort of thought about it for a good length of time before I decided on what would be appropriate for me. And, you know, we've had over 600 films in part or in whole done in the state of North Carolina. And it's interesting how some of them have wound up when they finally get into the theaters. I know there was one, I can't remember the title of it, but I remember Natalie Wood was in it. And they gave you the impression that the Pinehurst Hotel was right down the street from Kill Devil Hill and the Wright Brothers Memorial. And but anyway, I went back and looked at a lot of things that had been done with sports movies, and there have been some very good ones. There have also been some that, are not very good. But there have been some good ones, and I thought one of the best, and it's been acclaimed as one of the best, was Bull Durham, which was done right here in our area. The majority of it was filmed in Durham, but there was also some things done in Raleigh and Burlington and also Asheville. And as it turns out, I think it may be the best movie that was ever filmed in its entirety here in North Carolina. Although I do have a sort of a favorite with Patch Adams, which was done right here on the campus of the university.
That's right.
Robin Williams.
Well, I guess I want to come back to Bull Durham because what it's done for our community and our sort of our enjoyment of the community and the minor league baseball, I think,
And it just celebrated a big anniversary. I mean, the thought that they could get Kevin Costner to come back to Durham and bring a band with him, that was the interesting thing. I had no idea he was a musician and that he had ever done that. And I didn't see him, but I understand the response was about what I thought it would be, because I'd often said to people, do you think if Kevin Costner showed up at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park for a remake of Bull Durham 2 or something like that, you couldn't get through the people to get over there, because when he came here to do that, I think he had done a couple of other films, but he was, to a lot of people, most of the movie going public, he was a virtual unknown.
Well, it not anymore after Bull Durham, and it is a movie. Maybe we're jaundiced about this in terms of our localism, but if I see that movie coming on television, I want to watch it. I mean, it's just fun to watch.
There've been movies like The Last of the Mohicans, that was filmed up at Chimney Rock area. A lot of that film was up there, and then
also on the grounds of the Biltmore House, I think, too.
Right,
Bill.
And yeah. Wilmington. the whole Frank Capra Jr. had his enterprise down there, you know, and a set that was a mile long almost.
You go you've from had some great interviews on your on North Carolina People with these.
I went down there and sat with him in the studio because
really?
I wanted to see firsthand. And you walk down the street and hear all these fronts that you see in these soap operas that they've been filming, and you said, walk through there. And you walk through, there's nothing back there but 2x4s just holding up the front. And he said, look over there, and there was King Kong lying on a flat car. So, this business is strange, but Woody's right. This is a huge industry. But for us to lose the filming of Cold Mountain to Romania or someplace like that because of tax policies or incentive policies, we've got to correct that, because that film should have been made right where the book was written about.
Well, you know, we also, Bill, need to talk about our old friend Andy Griffith, because if you watch any of those, have the time to watch any of those Matlock shows, of course, they base it in Atlanta. They did some exterior shots here, but so many of those are done in the Wilmington, Wrightsville Beach, Outer Banks area of North Carolina.
I just spent an hour with him Saturday week ago, and because he's been coming to Chapel Hill, as you know, Woody, and he's coming back, I hope, again this fall. And we talked about that very point, that how he felt so much at home doing work here. And he wants to do more, even at 80 plus.
Right. Well, this is so interesting to me that I didn't think we'd get to Andy Griffith, but I've got this thing in my mind about what people who live outside the United States, how you acquaint them with North Carolina. And I have a whole list of topics, the Wright brothers, of course, Pinehurst for golf, Winston and Salem for their tobacco products, all kinds of things, Michael Jordan, all kinds of things that are important. And those things hit sometimes, lots of times. So you'll talk about our favorite things in North Carolina, even the university, Mr. Friday, or the Research Triangle Park, things that we're justifiably proudest of, and you get kind of a blank look from people. But you mention Andy Griffith, and you almost always get a hit with Andy. Andy Griffith is from North Carolina. Oh, yes! Oh,
well, the Mayberry connection and that went on for so long is shown daily in various parts of England. And if you talk to anybody in England, they've all seen, they know something about North Carolina, and they talk about Mount Airy, and they know Little Opie, and they're quite interested in the
Kimball. Just how long? Just how long do you think the Andy Griffith shows, the black and white? And I must admit that sometimes when I see an Andy Griffith show or a pass by it on a channel selector or something, and I see it in color, I don't stop as quickly as I do if it's the old black and white, the original series. Those shows will last forever, won't they?
I think they will. And, of course, I think important photographers still believe that black and white photography may be the most sophisticated and give the greatest number of possibilities for drawing in an audience. And that certainly is true of the film noir. And, of course, part of the reason why the film noir existed was that so many people came out of Europe during World War II, and they had a benevolent cousin in Hollywood who was making Technicolor. didn't have enough money to give them to make a Technicolor film, so they made black and white, and they were some of the best directors in the world at the time.
The black and white age better, don't they, than the color? The color in that intermediate time you see fading, and it doesn't seem sometimes to carry over as sharply. That's an interesting point you got to
raise. Kimball, why don't movies today make films as good as To Kill a Mockingbird? What's happened to the intention of motion pictures?
Well, I think there are still very good movies that you can see. You can see an awful lot of bad ones, too. I think it's a question of the large numbers that are made. I think you have to kind of watch director and maybe follow someone and what they're doing. One of my favorites is Woody Allen, and I did a book on Woody Allen a long time ago. And we recently saw Vicky Cristina Barcelona, I think it's called.
Yeah, it's a new one. Yeah.
It's a new one, and I was disappointed to read in the New York Times that Woody Allen said he didn't feel he could afford to make movies in New York City anymore, that he was going to have to make more movies in Europe than in the United States. So some of what's happening, I think, is the escalating cost of making films any place in the country.
Yet you read, you listen every Monday morning, and they give you the box score on the weekend receipts from the movie houses, and they run into tens of millions of dollars.
Tens of millions of dollars, and it doesn't seem to matter whether it's a good movie or not.
That's right.
Yeah, they didn't. I didn't pay any of that.
Well, it is. It's interesting as the time changes. We are talking about the movies, and we're talking about them in the context of the new calendar for 2009. That the Chapel Hill Historical Society has produced. And we ought to give credit to Val Lauder, who is the dynamo who pulled all this together. But we're celebrating the movies. And we're here together to talk about the movies and their Chapel Hill and North Carolina connection, visiting with Professor Kimball King, with Woody Durham, and President William Friday. And the four of us, will be back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the movies in Chapel Hill, and it's on the occasion of the release of the Chapel Hill Historical Society's 2009 calendar. It's called 100 Years of the Movies, and we've gathered a group of expert rememberers about movies in North Carolina and Chapel Hill and in related topics. Professor Kimball King from the English Department at the University, Woody Durham, our favorite sports broadcaster, and President William Friday. You can't talk about movies in Chapel Hill without talking about Kay Kaiser, who maybe at least in the World War II and post-World War II era was the favorite of many people throughout the country. And even today, people remember Kay Kaiser and his band. But how did Kay and Hollywood and Chapel Hill get intersected?
Well, it's a long story, but Kay, Georgia would tell you Kay made some of the worst movies ever been seen by man. She would tell you that. And I saw one of them, and I think she's right. But he was always such a clown, you know, an entertainer, and you loved him. I first met him in 1941. He was over in Raleigh one night, and in those days, Woody, we had a your old buddy Fred Fletcher had two microphones on State and Carolina campus switching back and forth during pep rallies. Governor Broughton and Kay were over that state, and I got to meet him there, and we had a lot of fun. But when he came back here, he really did bring the theater idea into public television in this state. Kay had more to do with what happened on camera in the early days of university television than any other person. He brought the Wallman brothers here, Dick Burdick and people like that, who later, one of them headed the station in New Orleans, one in Philadelphia, one with GBH in Boston. And these were the talents that Kay brought out of the movie experience to television. And he really did throw himself into it, and the university and the network is much the beneficiary of what he did.
So that the Hollywood experience, that this was a North Carolina boy and a Carolina boy who then made it big in Hollywood and then came back and brought his experience and connections in Hollywood for our benefit.
Well, he made it big first in radio. His band was the number one orchestra in the country in that generation. And, you know, he had a thing called the College of Musical Knowledge. He brought it to Raleigh, packed the Memorial Auditorium over there one night when he had his network program over there. I got it in the last seat on the last row to watch it. And but when he came back here, he decided that that was going to be the way he would make his contribution to the state and to the university, which he dearly loved. And he was head cheerleader here at one time when he was a student, and he formed his own band. And that was in the era of people like Hal Kemp, John Scott Trotter, all of them were right here in this area with orchestras. Now you can imagine what that meant. But yes, he was big in movies, big in radio, and big in talent.
You know, DG, sometime if you'll check the program log really closely for Turner Classic Movies, there'll be a Kay Kaiser movie on, and they have recently shown some of the older movies. I know there was one on early Saturday morning with Bob Hope and Dorothy L'Amour, and Bing Crosby made a cameo as an elevator operator at the end of the movie, of course, and got some of Hope's classic comments. And then my wife and I the other night were just looking for something to watch, and darned if Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers weren't there on Swing Time. So those are the type of old movies that you can see now that a lot of people are not familiar with, but boy, were they good.
Well, those bring back incredible memories. I'm thinking about Mr. Friday's contribution and the fact that one of the things that makes this community and the university so successful is that those of you who ran it were unapologetic about going out and getting people who had talent and connections to North Carolina to come back and contribute, and they were all happy to do it, or you made them happy to do it.
Well, I've never had the experience of anyone saying no. Everyone was quite happy to come back and do that, and that's the tradition. Woody's had that same experience every time he speaks to a sports star of historic significance. I'm sure not one has ever said no to him. Well, that's the university itself. It's not me or any individual. It's a drawing power that people want to be identified here. DG, I've actually had the experience of sitting in my office and Charles Carroll would call me up and he said, "Would you please go walk to the window?" And I said, "What for, Charles?" He said, "I want to know if there are any squirrels running out there this morning. You see any dogs anywhere?" He was homesick. You know, and that was honest with him, very genuine. He wasn't pulling my leg, and so I don't think he must have spent a fortune coming and going here. But he was not by himself. You could do that with a whole list of people, bankers, editors. Vermont Royster did it when he was running the Wall Street Journal, and so on. So it's the strength of the institution itself, and that's dramatically illustrated by the most popular part of that, and that's Woody's World of Sports. And I was just sitting at an occasion the other day, and I looked around Woody, and there sat Phil Ford and all these wonderful stars that you made famous. Well, here they are. Well, that's what happens here, and the performing arts is no exception. The revival of that on the Chapel Hill campus the past year or two has really been enormous. But look who came. Andy was here. James Taylor came. Now, James Taylor doesn't do things like that, but, you know, his mother said, "James, it's time to go to Chapel Hill." I took care of it.
Well, it's an interesting way in which the family, state, and university assets intersect, and people like the three guests that we've got today leverage those assets. Mr. Friday, we can't talk about Kay Kaiser and without mentioning who some of us believe is the most beautiful woman in the world, and maybe Kay Kaiser's greatest gift was to bring Georgia Kaiser to Chapel Hill, where she still is here and a great blessing to us.
Well, you know, she's had an enormous influence in this town as founder of the Preservation Society, working with this historical society. She and Val Lauder are as close as the fingers on your hand and working with projects like this. And Georgia graduated at Chapel Hill after she came here. And she's carried that spirit of inquiry and creativeness and challenge all through all the years of her life. And she's still at it. Ida and I met with her last week on two or three projects. So I know, because I have to sit there and listen to them talk most
of
the time.
Well, you mentioned Val and George's partnership. I think there's a third regular participant in that triumvirate.
Well,
That's close to you, who is close to you.
They went through school together. They were in Ida and Georgia, met in an art class over here under Bob Howard, and she just turned to George and said, you taking this as a casual course? She said, well, why don't you enroll and let's get it for credit? And so that started a friendship that's now run for 50 years, and they've had a wonderful time together.
Wow.
Well, George was a student of mine, actually, in the film.
Is that right, Kimball?
In the film
Kimball
criticism
King.
Course.
Were you, you had some, I mean, I bet you had lots of beautiful women. Did you ever have anyone more beautiful than George?
No one more beautiful than Georgia, but, or no one more enthusiastic about film. And she had the notion then, and it's been more than 40 years, that Carolina has offered a film criticism course, that the history of the movies drew us into the history of the whole country, and that you learned a lot about the United States and about Carolina and about any other place that you might live if you looked at films. And that's one of the things that she and Val Lauder had in mind when the calendar came up, among other things, that they've sponsored together over the years, that part of the history of Chapel Hill is connected with the history of movies.
Well, we are celebrating the Chapel Hill Historical Society's 2009 calendar, 100 years of the movies, and I'm celebrating with Kimball King, with Woody Durham, and William Friday, and we'll all be back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Three of my friends and I are celebrating the Chapel Hill Historical Society's 2009 calendar, which will be available at outlets throughout our town. Check the Chapel Hill Museum. You can get a copy of it. And it's wonderful. It's just a great calendar. In every month, there is a description of some connection to the movies that Chapel Hill has. And the only way we can cover it all, you got to go buy that calendar to get it. But we can't get off Kay Kaiser, and during the break, Mr. Friday, thinking that this would be a secret, reminded us that Georgia Kaiser will not give an A-plus rating to her husband's films, that she said they're some of the worst. But the thing about the movies that Kay Kaiser made that get me excited is that he was so excited and projected that it was, you all mentioned that he was a cheerleader. He looks like a cheerleader, getting up, banging around. It's always just, you want to get up and jump around with him. It's enthusiasm that we need more of these days.
You ever hear the story of how he got to be cheerleader here?
No, sir.
They were having auditions down in the old baseball field, Emerson Stadium, and he said he was sitting up there in the stands and said there were, these candidates are going up, and they were saying, oh, three cheers. God, Kay could do it. He said his turn came, and said he got up, and he says, all right, gang, let's give three cheers for the Baptist Church. And he said it frightened him so that everybody just broke out roaring in laughter. And he said, and most of all, himself. That's a true story.
Well, it was like you see him in the movies, and I, of course, didn't have the privilege of ever knowing him personally, but it was like, he jumps up and says, this is so silly. Are you going to laugh about this with me? And I think it's, anyway.
Well,
let
me ask Woody something.
Yes, sir.
Was Kay, you remember when Norm Spear was here's head cheerleader?
Yes.
He brought all those card tricks, which were so wonderful here, which I thought came out of that movie world and the influence of Hollywood in college sports. But did Kay have, I never did hear him say.
I don't know. I talked to Norman once via telephone interview, and he was out in California, Los Angeles, Hollywood at that time, and he was involved in the production of some religious programming. And we talked about first the card section. There's another cheerleader or so along the way that I think claims credit for actually kind of starting it, and if that's the case, then certainly Norman I think, sort of built it up, because I remember seeing that when I would come to games. And he was talking about he had seen some of that at the games in Los Angeles at Southern California or UCLA. And that's also where he got the idea for the Victory Bell, because those two schools played for a bell. And he wrote the Union Pacific Railroad, and by golly, they sent him the bell that is mounted on that cart today. And it's been here now for, what, 60-plus years, because that was the late 40s. And a lot of people don't, they remember him as a cheerleader, but they don't remember the fact that he came to Carolina as an All-America diver on the swim team. And he was amazing.
See, in those days, DG, you had Norm doing that, and Tarzan Morris was running around down on the playing field. If you didn't know that voice, you would never forget it, right?
And Bushy Cook was leading Ramesses, remember?
Oh, man, well, we have another. I mean, let's do another radio program on this set of here. I think we can go on for hours about that. Well, we are. I mean, we're supposed to be talking about the 100.
Well, he was talking about Kay Kizer.
Yeah,
I will say
this.
You look at Kay Kizer, even when he came back to Chapel Hill, you look at Billy Arthur. And there are a couple of other guys along through the years. Norman would be one of them. There was a guy here once named Greg Lumpus from over in Durham. I mean, from Burlington, rather. Yeah. He's over there in the Lunsford. They called him Lumpy. But Greg Lunsford, and he was magic on that platform in front of the student body. You know, getting them to get into the game and be a part of the atmosphere. But you look at those people and you just say, I'll bet one time in their lives they were a cheerleader.
Oh, man. Well, that we've only got a minute or two left. Woody, you mentioned about the you've got, I can't remember what month you've got, but you've got an article about Bull Durham. And the movie that was made, which is an important movie. And I wrote an article about Patch Adams, and it was coming out of a real personal experience for me. This was about 10 years ago, and I'd just given up my job at the university and run for the Senate and got beat pretty bad. And my wife said I was in deep depression. And I was riding my bicycle across the campus one day, and there was this movie being shot. And they said, they're looking for extras. You need to do that, because that'll keep you out of the house.
So you were an extra in Patch Adams?
I was an extra, and met lots of wonderful people. Had a great time. Roland Giddes was kind of a professional extra. He really, I think he even had an agent who got lined up jobs for him, and he would do all of these interesting things. I got to be a big fan of Roland's, and Roland encouraged me. So I signed up as an extra and got fitted for a costume, and I was doing so well that they got me out of the crowd and said, you get to be up on the platform during the graduation ceremony. Well, now that meant I was going to be in the movie, really, rather than just a face. And I was right up there by the podium, and I saw the director. He had his little magnifying glass, or whatever it was, telescope right there, sizing it up. And all of a sudden, I saw him speak to somebody. And then about 30 seconds later, somebody came up and moved me all the way to the end. So I lost my chance to be immortalized. But it was a great social occasion where you sat around and visited. And I left with... I don't know whether Patch Adams was all that great a movie, but it sure turned my life around, and I'll be grateful for that.
Well, I was entertained by it, and you said earlier, and that's a lot of the reason that I've watched movies through the years, is not so much for the lesson it taught or anything like that, but I've just watched it to entertain, and Patch Adams was entertaining. Maybe I was influenced by the fact that it was shot here on the majority of it was shot here on the campus, and Kimball will remember. The guy's name. Remember when he went before the medical committee at the end of the movie?
Yes.
They were going to decide where he was going to stay. Was it Richard Alden?
Yeah.
Who was the chair of that committee? And at that time was having some health problems, and unfortunately, but I mention his name only because he is the narrator of so many documentaries and things that have been done, particularly personal biographies. Of various people. You'll see him a lot still on the various biography channels and like that with his narration.
Very good too.
Yeah.
Don't close without paying tribute to all the authors here whose books have been made into movies, to people like John Ely, who trained so many movie producers, and his own books you know, have been made into movies. And John Clayton and fellas like that, Ed French, you know, back there in the old days.
Well, I wish we again, this is like the cheerleaders. This is a separate program that we ought to do sometime and reminisce about the movies made out of the Chapel Hill books, the Chapel Hill authors. So many things going on in this wonderful town. We're celebrating, and I guess you'd have to say, honestly, we're promoting the Chapel Hill Historical Society's 2009
calendar. No one
would
guess that, did you?
And it's available. You can get it at the Chapel Hill Museum and other Bull's Head and other bookstores, local bookstores, and it'll be available other places. And your purchase of it will support the great work that that society is doing to preserve and teach our history. So we want you to do that. A little promotion about next year's calendar. Maybe one of the best things about this year's calendar is that there is a preview of next year's calendar, which will feature the peanut brittle making capabilities of William and Ida Friday, and tell us how they do it. And there's a whole page. Mr. Friday, can you give us a secret or two about that before we quit?
It's a North Carolina peanut. That's the secret to the whole thing. They're big and they're wholesome and they're nutritious.
Well,
but it's an old recipe that we can talk about again sometime later.
Well, I hope a year from now we can come back and similarly promote the 2010 calendar. We've been talking about 100 years of the movies here in Chapel Hill, all thanks to the Chapel Hill Historical Society's 2009 calendar, visiting with Professor Kimball King, Woody Durham, and President William Friday. Thanks to the three of you for sharing your memories.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.